ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC AFL Daily Pod Time. Round 15 is in the books, as you know by now. Five drops per week, five different flavours. Be a friend, tell a friend about the podcast. You can go onto the Wall of Fame if you send proof. Ben Cameron alongside the former Hawk and Blue, 2019 AFLW Coach of the Year as well, Daniel Harford. And our jumping off point tonight, Harf,
yes,
is Carlton. The Fraser Freight Train is gathering steam at five and zip. Choo-choo, da-da-da-da-da. The Blues are a chance of making the wild card.
It's bizarre, isn't it? It's totally bizarre to be thinking about that from a Carlton perspective after what happened at the start of the season, the first 9 weeks. It's almost impossible to think that we could be here. But you talk about the Fraser Freight Train. I'm not sure they want the train analogy at the moment. There was a Teague train last time and that sort of didn't go overly well. So my mates, the Carlton mates, are calling it the Fraser Ferry. It's just a really nice ferry.
Fraser Ferry, I don't mind it.
It's not as...
ferrying you to a new coach.
That's right. It's not as aggressive as the train. It's not as... You know, the image isn't of power and steam. It's more about just a nice, gentle course.
We've had Fraser the saviour as well.
Yes. I'll tell you what it is. It's tough to ignore him now. It's tough to start to ignore him or continue to ignore him as a potential candidate for the position. Five in a row, and they've beaten some quality teams in that five and on the road as well. And then they've got West Coast and Richmond, I think, the next 2 weeks. So to every chance it's 7-0. And I think what it's done inadvertently is put them in a really challenging situation. Yeah. This isn't the situation they wanted themselves to be in, I'm sure, the Carlton hierarchy.
Oh, I think they're feeling the pressure of that, Harf. I think they're thinking, we don't want this to be like the Teague train where there was such a groundswell of support in the back half of the season that we're forced to appoint Josh Fraser. We want to go through a proper process and then appoint whoever the best candidate is. But it would be very Carlton if they say, look, we're not doing that because we made that mistake before. They get someone else, that doesn't work. Josh Fraser goes elsewhere and is incredibly successful. Like, oh, dearie me.
Yeah, no, it's... Like, it's great for the fans, and I really think it's fantastic for them to go through this after the challenges that they've faced as a supporter base for their footy club in the last couple of years. But it does. It puts them in a really awkward situation because he's just so calm. He's just so measured. There's nothing over the top about him at any degree. He seems to have a really good handle on managing the team. Now, there's obviously a lot more to it these days, coaching an AFL team, than just the X's and O's, and in large part, a lot of that's done by the assistants and the strategists anyway. Yeah. So if he's able to manage the rest of the role pretty well through the next 8 weeks, 6 weeks, whatever it is, 7 weeks, gee, it's going to be tough to knock him back. If they finish under his reign sort of, 10-4, even better, you'd be a tough panel, coaching panel, to say this job isn't for you. You know your players, you know the club, you know the system, you know who in the zoo, you know what you sort of want, I imagine, to bring in on top of what they can do in the off-season. I reckon he's made it really hard for Carlton. But he's doing a hell of a job, and I have nothing but admiration for the way he's doing it.
So, as it stands at the moment, they are one win outside of the top 10.
Yep.
So, North Melbourne are there 7-7. Carlton are 6-8, one win behind them. They're still better placed than they were in 2023 when they made that thrilling run to the prelim final.
Is that right?
Yeah. Still.
Still,
yep.
Wow.
So,
well, they're riding a wave, aren't they?
Yeah, they certainly are.
And you can see it in the players out there on the field. I mean, it helps when your guns are performing. And Cripper's last 5 weeks have been off the charts.
He looks like prime Cripper again. He looked washed up at the start of the year. With all due respect to Patrick Cripps, and no one loves him more than me. They've got West Coast and Richmond to come, so that should get to 7-0 under the caretaker. That will get them also to 500. They'll be level on the ledger throughout the season, which will just be remarkable from where they were with one win through their first nine games. There's a few things as well, Harf, that we have to pick apart. So I thought their pressure was amazing, the way they stopped GWS from moving the ball with their hands. So that was really well coached and set up. And then late in the game, they were in front in a close game, and they just manipulated it. Took a little bit of time out of the game, some sand slipped through the hourglass, chipped it around, worked it around the 50, then went in, handled those situations so much better than they did at the start of the year.
Well, which isn't the reason we're in the situation we are with Carlton and the interim coach on the back of the fact they couldn't hold the lead. Like the bad dog walker, they just cannot hold the lead. The dog just gets off the leash. You just got to hold the lead, mate. Just control the dog. Like, Vossi couldn't do it. But Josh Fraser has put in a system or a belief or a pattern of play that they find themselves in those scenarios where the game's in control. This is what we do, and there's no fuss to it. There's no stress to it. This is just what we do. Whereas they seemed, under the old regime, they seemed panicked.
Yeah.
Often. Way too often for Carlton Flustered. Fans liking.
Flustered. I'm a panicker. I can recognise it.
Yeah.
I like that. The bad dog walker, they couldn't hold on to the lead. Brandon Walker from the Fremantle Dockers, do you remember during the COVID times, they were travelling interstate, and they had to self-quarantine at home.
Right, yes.
And he actually self-reported because he took his dog for a walk and then realised, I'm meant to be quarantining. So he reported him. All was good in the end, but
he wouldn't have come across anyone.
Just gave him the moniker for a while, the dog walker.
The dog walker.
Yeah, which I was pretty proud of, but didn't really catch on, safe to say. We did have one of the moments of the year half, which was Matt Cottrell in the song.
Yes.
Bringing the harmonica. This is how it went down.
So good.
So that is the harmonica. You've sung the Carlton song a number of times. It did get me thinking.
Not many.
Which instruments are acceptable to take into a team song? Where are we drawing the line?
Well, I don't think there's any line drawn. If you can bring in a drum kit, bring in your drum kit and go bananas and get things rocking off.
I think it's got to be handheld. I think that's rule number one. But I think an esky is a drum. I think we could see a little...
Well, not in the rugby league. That's what they do. The rugby leaguers are esky bangers.
A bit more body percussion.
What?
Stamping at the feet.
But so whacking your chest.
Yeah. The Dockers could do that with theirs.
I'd love to see some
more chant.
Some more banjo action.
Which song?
Well, this is you go through the old
songs are
the traditional theme songs. There's a lot of banjo.
Yeah.
I'd like to see some live banjo action for some of the songs. Love to see a sax brought in around the neck, hanging there out and just go.
Well, the Adelaide Crows have the saxophonist.
They do. They do.
Yeah.
I'd like to see some sax action. It's Kenny G sort of stuff. A little bit of flutey thing on the way through.
Piccolo.
Piccolo, yes. The piccolo.
So I've got two specific ones here, Harv.
Banjo's the one.
I think the trumpet at the start of the Gold Coast Suns song, like we get after a goal. Do, 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 do. Then get into the song. And I've got the cymbals in the GWS song. So give me
Where
a few bars. Give me a few bars.
I'm trying to think of the GWS song.
We're the greater Western Sydney Giants. We're the biggest and the best, and we will never surrender. We'll fight. I think that could work.
Bring in the big cymbals.
Yep.
That'd be good fun. I quite like the fact there's a bit of personality
Love it.
into the song. It's these days they've changed it a bit too. Like they do the big shh. Everyone does the big shh. And then someone will start it up, but I'm not sure if it's an Australian cricket team situation where they hand that down as players disappear or not. But they give it a little bit. The kids are in there, so it's a bit of a thing these days. Whereas back in the old days, it was just something you did at the end of the game.
Yeah,
you enjoyed it because it's a funny thing, isn't it? Like no other sport does what we do.
No,
it's a weird thing that we have as part of our Indigenous game, the Australian rules game.
Link arms. Look each other in the eyes.
And
sing a song.
Like it sounds a bit odd when you break it down like that.
Yep.
Post-game. But it's a nice part of the game.
Let's move on to the serious stuff, as fun as that was. The Western Bulldogs and St Kilda, the game we've just finished broadcasting here. A 23-point win to the Western Bulldogs. It was an 8-point game. Like, very important for both of these two teams. St Kilda slipped to 12th. The Bulldogs go right up to 7th on the ladder on the back of the win. And it was Luke Beveridge doing Luke Beveridge things. English, Lobb and Norton played largely forward. Bontempelli and Matt Kennedy were in the ruck. And Bailey Dale was coming in off the wing to slide behind the ball. So it was a little bit funky, but more normal in the second half, and they hold on to win by 23 points.
Yeah, it was a bit of a grind, really. It was a bit of a punish to watch from start to finish. Nothing really stood out. We had two players sort of decided they'd dominate the games from either team, one from each team, which sort of kept the game going, really, in terms of interest, because it was a bit of a grind. Ball sort of pinballed back and forth between the arcs. The defences largely had the ascendancy for the whole game. Tough to score. So it was a bit of a tough watch. But in the end, I reckon St Kilda would have been really disappointed not to get the points. I'm not 100% convinced the Bulldogs were by far the better team, but they'd walk away with a 22-point victory, and they will take that every day after the disaster of the first quarter last week. But it wasn't a good game of footy, really. It was tough. It was controlled to a large degree, and it did pinball a little bit. But, yeah, it was a tough watch. And the Bulldogs put themselves in a position now where they could start to think about springboarding into some September action, I reckon, which maybe a month ago, prior to that little run of wins they had against Melbourne, Collingwood, the Hawks by single digits, we're starting to think, well, what are the Bulldogs going to do this year? Where are they going to finish? Yeah. I was starting to think bottom half of the table, but all of a sudden they're in contention. So it's a big win in the end. As you said, the 8-point game, a big win for the Bulldogs.
So Nasai Wanganeen-Malira, he was on track for world record metres gained pace early on in the game. He was on track for 50 as well. Ended up with 44 disposals, 31 of those were kicks. He ended up with a goal, 916 metres gained, 6 score involvements. Bontempelli, 34 disposals, 13 clearances,
yep.
7 tackles as well, a goal as well, and the best pickup you are ever likely to see.
Correct.
Where he just swooped on it one-handed, swiveled, snapped, and gold. Who was better?
I think Naz probably takes it. We know the Bulldogs won, but I think in terms of the most valuable player out on the field, it probably was Naz. But I don't think there was a heap in it. Naz makes the game, he puts it into overdrive when he gets the ball in hand. Bont sort of makes the game stop a bit and then creates on the back of it. He's a fabulous player. And those 13 clearances were critical for the Bulldogs, even though he played a bit of time in ruck.
Yeah.
Which was a bit odd for me through the afternoon. But so Naz was the one that makes the game spin a bit. And I quite liked that. He was utterly dynamic. What we did learn out of this afternoon was that Aaron Hall has the all-time metres gained record, which was a name I wasn't expecting to associate with that number.
Could have left me here. If I started guessing those names at halftime, I'd still be here.
Yeah, 1,173, according to Daniel Hoyne.
It's conjecture over that.
My mate Hoyne doesn't get it wrong, mate. He's a data man, and that's the number, 1,173. But it was like those two stood out, like the proverbial, and the rest of it was a bit of a grind. The defenders of the Bulldogs, Karmas and O'Donnell, were really good. Wilkie did a good job. Silvani is really growing in that key defensive role for St Kilda, so he's been a positive pickup as well. But they did have a couple of problems injury-wise. De Koning went out with ribs in the first half.
Hospital precautionary scans. Yep.
So we'll keep an eye on that through the coming days. And Jack Sinclair was a big one. He just stopped. Just trying to defend a lead. He just stopped. Bob and I thought it was Achilles when it happened, but Sakura telling us it's calf. We'll keep an eye on that too, because that
they're all linked.
They are. The soleus is in there somewhere too, your favourite muscle in the body. And he was in a moon boot early, so that sort of suggested that there might have been a bit more damage than we thought. So that's, I mean, if you lose De Koning and Sinclair for a period of time for the Saints, that's disaster.
Yep.
Disaster for them in their current position of 6-9.
It was a big game yesterday afternoon at the Adelaide Oval. Adelaide defeating Melbourne by 17 points. And my key takeaway here that we do on a Sunday night half is that Adelaide are better placed this year than last year. Feel free
in terms
to
of?
Disagree with me here. Well, positionally on the ladder, they're actually in a very similar position. It was late in the year last year where they went on a winning streak. So I think they're one game worse off at the moment than they were at the corresponding time last year. But my point is that now they've had the experience of the finals last year.
Yep.
So they've got that in the back pocket as they build for the back end of this year. Do you agree or disagree?
Well, I've talked to you about this before. I'm holding my judgment on Adelaide until we get to September. Because outside of doing something in September, I don't know how you judge them. Yep. Unless they don't get there, and that would be a problem. Yep. Finishing home and away leaders last year.
They'll get there now, you would think.
They probably do get there now. So I'm reserving my judgment on Adelaide until they get there and show me what they are capable of doing. That was a good win yesterday against the Demons. And that was two good teams going head-to-head. So it was a good game of footy. And it was tough. And it wasn't overly free-flowing. you know, it's 79 to 62, so it's not the 100-100s sort of score lines we've been getting from teams in the last 10 weeks of footy, I reckon. So it was a bit of a reference to the quality of the contest. So I respected that, and their ability to jump away late suggests that they might be better placed. Yeah. They might just be better placed at the moment.
It was 10 scoring shots to one in the final term, and they came from behind to win that game in the final term. We did have Matty Nix on AFL Saturday, which you can find in this podcast channel if you wish to catch up with that. Corbin Middlemass asked him about addressing their shortcomings from last year to this year and how they feel like they're going in terms of that improvement. I love this too. So Josh Rochelli, he spoke to us post-game yesterday about the World Cup game in the morning. This is what he said.
Oh, it's a funny story. My brother rolled into my house at about 4 a.m. He had a big night and woke me up. So I cracked the shits with him and I couldn't fall back asleep. So I said, why not? I'll just watch the game. So I watched the game and I've fallen back asleep for a couple of hours.
So that was Josh Rochelli yesterday. Good story. Funny. Wouldn't be happy with the brother.
No.
I'd be livid. Game day. Playing in the AFL, mate. I'm not playing.
Automatic key taken off privilege.
Yeah.
You're not getting a key to my house. Give me my key back. You're not welcome anymore to come in.
Go live somewhere else. But I thought it was funny he said that because we had him in the rooms a week before and Corbin Middlemass asked him this question.
As Matthew Nix had to have a chat to any of the boys, said, hey, the 5 a.m. game's not before a game. We don't need to be taking those in.
Yeah, I think it's pretty self-explanatory. I don't think many boys will be doing that.
It's pretty self-explanatory. I don't think many boys will be doing that.
Well, the problem was his brother's not in the meeting when Matty Nix is talking about this sort of stuff. So how is he supposed to know that this is a no-go zone if he's not in the meeting?
And he's watched the game. I think it was a convenient excuse for Josh.
You reckon?
Oh, I think it was a convenient excuse.
It wasn't a convenient morning. I woke up at 4:55 just by accident. So I got up and watched. And so you watched the first half and you go, I'm going back to bed.
I fell asleep at halftime. I just started back off.
It was a disaster for the soccer.
Disaster. Melbourne, 8-0 at the MCG, 1-6 everywhere else.
I'm okay with that. Because we touched on them a bit too this year, that they're a team that's evolving.
Yeah.
And they've, even their wins at the MCG, they've had to work pretty hard for. So they're not exactly dominating the MCG, but they're winning. They're finding a way to win. So that's the first step. The next step's going to be winning on the road.
The Gold Coast Suns defeated Hawthorn by 16 points half. And our takeaway here is our answer to this question. Could Nick Watson win the Coleman medal? He's six off the lead at the moment. He's six behind Ben King. Now, the reason I ask you this question...
Yeah, continue.
...is because he stands a mighty 170 centimetres tall, Nick Watson.
It's not very big, is it?
He would be...
I'm 177. I'm small.
Yeah, me too. Oh, I say 178, but I think I'm adding a few. He would be the second smallest player ever to win the... Well, it wasn't the Coleman medal back in 1911, but to win the goal kicking in the VFL AFL since Vin Gardner...
VG.
Kicked 46 goals way back then in 1911. So it would be a monumental achievement if this 170-centimetre player can win the goal kicking.
He's had an amazing year. I must admit, I was a bit sceptical when they invested so heavily in him at the draft with pick five a couple of years ago. Small forward at pick five, gee, we want to be good. Well, turns out he's everything that people thought he was and a bit more. He's become a sensational player. I would love him to win the Coleman. I think it'd be a great story. And you know what? It's one of those stories where it would have a ripple effect through junior football.
Yeah.
Because the small kid would all of a sudden think, I'm half a chance here. Now, there's been great stories of that through the journey. And the great Brent Harvey's the poster boy for small fellas to do great things. But Nick Watson does it with a certain amount of personality and flair and skill. So skilled is that young fella. I think it would ripple through junior footy across the country, and I think it would be magnificent. And the way that they play and the way his role in that, he's going to get some looks.
Yeah.
He's going to get some looks. So it would be a fascinating story. I don't think anybody in the world could have predicted that might be a chance at the start of the season.
It's a story I'm cheering for. Don't put him in the middle, Sam. I want him to win the Coleman because that would be very cool to sit alongside Vin
Gardner. I hadn't
thought
about it, but it would be a very, very special thing.
Was
he kicked 35?
36.
36.
And Ben King's on 42.
I know.
So he's right there.
Are you counting finals?
No.
So it's pure Coleman, home and away Coleman.
Pure home and away.
Yeah, okay.
The other thing in the game from the weekend was, back on Friday night, was I was watching on Fox Footy pregame and Sam Mitchell was asked about what they'd worked on in the bye. He said, we worked on centre bounce down. We haven't been scoring out of there. We've been getting scored against. Boy, did that flip. And oh, part of that was because Will Day's in there and he's a difference maker. But, John Newcombe had 10 clearances. Eight of those 10 were in centre bounce downs. And in the third quarter, they were taking it out of there at will. I think it was 9-0. And they kicked, I think it was 3 goals out of there in that, or late in the first quarter, it was, out of the middle. So if you want to come up against anyone for centre clearances at the moment, it's probably the Gold Coast Suns. But yeah, that was impressive from the Hawks.
Yeah, it was. Well, they threw punches in bunches in that game, didn't they? They scored heavily in short periods, you know, 5-6 minute bursts where they kicked 4 or 5 goals a couple of times through the game. And that was the difference in the contest. They were able to get out of centre bounce and restrict Gold Coast, because their numbers this year from a clearance and centre bounce perspective are really odd for a talented crew that's in there all the time. It doesn't make any sense to me what's happened to the Gold Coast and their centre clearance work. But the Hawks obviously went to work on it and made big inroads with that. And you mentioned Will Day. I mean, he's the difference. He's the reason they can win a premiership. He's the one. Without him, it's a big challenge. They don't have the quality in the class and the depth in that area of the ground, in my view. He adds every single one of those components, and he's the reason why they can win a premiership.
He's the straw that stirs the drink for the Hawks. There's no doubt about that.
Yep.
Also, just worth playing this audio. So reports during the week about misgivings from the players towards the senior coach, Damien Hardwick, at the Gold Coast Suns, and the coaches being frustrated with the players. Mac Andrew was interviewed on ABC Sport post-game. This is what he said.
No, I don't know who's given, who was it, Tom Morris, that information that... as far as I'm concerned, was, from what I know, everything's pretty good. Like, I love Dimmer. I know Dimmer loves all the boys. All the boys love Dimmer. So I don't know where he's getting that mail from. Yeah, it's complete bull.
I don't think he can say much else, but
no, he's not going to say anything.
Strong, though.
But it was strong.
Yeah.
And he absolutely shut it down, which we get from players. Players back their coaches. I can't remember the last time a player came out and sort of swung one at the coach in a post-game presser when they were asked a question regarding any issue. So, no too surprising. I'd be... And Dimmitt sort of referenced it during the week. He talks about the adult conversation, the big boy conversations they've had. And you've got to have them. And some players, particularly if you're on the fringe, will not appreciate those.
Yeah.
Because it's one of the other reasons why you're not getting a game. He doesn't like me because he spoke to me really aggressively or harshly. When in reality, it's actually the opposite. It's the reason I'm talking to you like this is because I need you to be better. I want you to be better. I think you can be better. How you take those conversations is really important. Dim has had those for years as a senior coach. So there's no issue from his perspective. How the players take it and whether or not they're ready to receive it or hear the information is the reason why sometimes you get these stories pop up in the media. It does lead me into my half series too.
Yes.
Because Sam Mitchell experienced something that I think most of us, tens of thousands, possibly hundreds of thousands of Australians would have experienced after working on the Gold Coast. You go up there, you have a great experience, you've got your theme parks, you got Wet n Wild and Movie World and Dream World. You have a great time and you're on the beach there and you go to Cavalav and you're just living the life for a week with you and the kids and whoever else is up there with you. Not the schoolie section. This is a family holiday. And you're having the best time. And you've got great memories. You come home, you know, that was unbelievable. But you pay a price. And the Hawks are going to pay the price.
Yeah.
With a couple of injuries and also a suspension to Josh Wirtle.
Should have paid more of a price, in my opinion, too.
You want Jack Ginnivan suspended for his little jumper punch. I'm less offended by that. I think if you whack someone with a punch, the jumper component does complicate things. If you whack someone with a punch, you should get a week already as goose tax and then get suspended on top of that. So you should get 2 minimum. I'm not too offended by Jack Ginnivan, but it's the great Gold Coast experience. You go up there, you have great memories. Now, hasn't been a great memory up until that point for Hawthorn for 7 years, I think. Hadn't won a game up there in Brisbane or Queensland for 7 years. They go up there, they have the experience, the theme park experience. They come back, all joy, singing the song, punch in the air. But they come back and they pay a price with Weddle and Impey and whatever else comes from that game. So it's the quintessential Gold Coast holiday experience that Hawthorn have experienced on the weekend. And Sam Mitchell comes home and he goes, so pleased, so happy. Got some great photos, some great memories with the boys. I look back on them fondly in years to come, but we are going to pay an immediate price.
Yep.
Normally for us, it's finance.
Yep.
We lose all our money. We spend all our money on holidays. For Sam Mitchell, it's players. And that's going to be a problem for them.
But I always say half. Like, you've got to spend your money on something. And you can't take it with you when you're gone, so you might as well have a great holiday. So Sam should be happy with that. My takeaway from the Fremantle and Geelong game back on Thursday night is your answer to this question. Did Geelong keep some tricks up their sleeves?
Well, It's a very fine question. Now, Chris Scott denied this effectively post-game, didn't he, in his press conference? I wonder if there was just a couple of little things that they could have done. We were talking earlier about Oisin Mullen has tagged for the last 10 weeks. Yeah. He goes to Fremantle, doesn't tag.
He's a loyalist to the long sleeve polo, Chris, as well. So he might have a few tricks up there.
But Josh Fraser's got the hoodie and he's got the long sleeve polo.
Oh, I think he kept some tricks up his sleeve. Yeah. I think he kept some powder dry.
For later in the season.
And we know he does that. Like, he is as slippery as they come. And I say that with a great deal of respect.
Yep.
Like, he's probably the best coach in the competition.
There was a sense through the game, wasn't there? Particularly when the game got sort of out of reach, but just Freo got control late in the game. You just thought there might have been some levers that they could have pulled. Obviously, Tom Stewart wasn't there, so that's one thing he's got in the back of his mind for next time if they go to Perth and take on Fremantle, or they play them anywhere in the postseason. So that's one thing. But the Mullen thing, the O'Connor thing at halfback, how they use Sam De Koning, Blitzars, could he have gone to Jackson and locked him out of the game? He was the dominant force the other night. I think that's still up the sleeve as well. So to answer your question, gone around the circle a little bit. Yes.
Yep.
I will say, if I have to be definitive one way or the other, I will say yes.
Oh, I agree with you. Collingwood defeated Port Adelaide by 26 points, and our takeaway was that this was the worst quarter of the year. The final quarter.
The last quarter. Yeah.
6 behinds to 4 behinds, no goals scored, around 22 minutes 57, I think, under 23 minutes.
That's extraordinary.
And then at the very end of the game, did you see Steel Sidebottom? Took a mark. Defensive 50.
Yes.
Turned around as the siren sounded. Booted it through Port Adelaide's goal.
I didn't see that.
Score counts. Because you're taking a mark. So the kick counted after the siren. One behind.
Why would he do that?
I think he was celebrating, but he's just booted it through.
Why would that man do that? I did not see that. I must admit that's the first I come across that.
Yeah.
It was a horrible game. They're two average teams. We know that Port Adelaide have... I think they're probably overachieved this year, Port Adelaide, with what they've got and what they've where they've been. So a bit of kudos to Josh Carr for what he's done with that team. But it was a tough watch. And Collingwood, they're just a team. They're bang average. We talked about that a couple of weeks ago, I reckon. They're a bit less than bang average now. They're 6.5, 7.5 wins and losses in a percentage of 101.5. So they are where they are, sitting in 11th at the moment. It was a tough game. But that was a bad quarter of footy. I tell you what, though, as we move into sort of Sunday sessions with North Melbourne and Richmond, that first quarter with North Melbourne and Richmond wasn't much better. Just the two goals from them, if you don't mind.
No, it did make me think of Mel Michael. Remember that? Just going back to Sidebottom's random behind at the very end of the game. It made me think of when Mel Michael, remember when he got it like 20 metres out from Brisbane's defensive goal and just hammered it into the second tier as a rush behind, booted it through.
I do not remember that, but you're a
very, very strange stuff that has happened in the world of footy. Richmond and North Melbourne, there's a reason why we left this game for last. And
it started with the first quarter.
Yeah, it's not leaving.
One goal two to one goal two.
This was a pretty ugly game of football, wasn't it? Port Adelaide had a lot of injuries out of that game too.
We
couldn't leave that. A patella tendon injury for Bigisava, Radigalia and McGinley. Finished on crutches. Lukosius had a calf niggle, so there are a few issues in that. North Melbourne won by 25 points, and our takeaway was not much better than Port Adelaide and Collingwood.
Remember the DVDs you used to buy for the games?
Name a game,
there you go. They're out of business these days, just the modern media landscape. But there would be no one on the planet, hardcore supporter and all, between Richmond and the North fans that would have ever wanted to watch, digest, take in what that game produced this afternoon. And in the end, wins are wins for North Melbourne, so they're doing a good job. And Richmond probably should be a bit better than they're performing this year, despite the fact they've got horrible injury results as well. But no, there was no more.
What do you reckon the main avenue of
North Melbourne are 10th?
Yeah.
They're in the 10th. They're in the wild card.
What do you reckon the main avenue of Name a Game's, like, income was? Was it mainly like Denise Harford buying your first game? Like,
it
would be that.
My mother's name?
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
How did you remember that?
Because you've spoken about Denise regularly.
Have I?
Yeah. Here on the broadcast.
Welcome,
like, it would have been a lot of parents buying first games as like.
Oh, yeah.
Random
first games.
Game.
Milestone games, first games. Yeah, they would have been big sellers at Name a Game.
If this podcast was the name of game people would be buying today.
There'd be Wall of Fame action everywhere.
We'll have some symbols to take us out. We're the greater Western Sydney Giants. We're the biggest and the best.
And we will never surrender.
See?
We'll fight until the end. Greater than the rest.
This has been ABC AFL Daily Podcast, 5 drops a week.